Oh yeah, it's me. What's good, everyone? It's Marcus Orpink.
What up? What up? It's Charles or Chuck.
What's going on? You got Matt or Has
and Boyd.
Yippee! Oh man, he did it wrong. He's never seen the show before.
Is there a right way to do it?
Yes, the same way we've been doing it for almost 200 episodes. If you can believe that, Charles.
Golly.
Isn't that insane? What's going on, everyone? Gavin is still in Japan doing his thing. We're obviously gonna be talking about Mr. Gavin throughout a lot of this episode. Obviously, that's our guy. Did amazingly at Kagaribi, of course. A lot of players, a lot of big results to talk about from Kagaribi. Biggest tournament of all time. Obviously, we're gonna be talking about it. We got some comments from last episode's YouTube that Charles is gonna be going over, and some top tweets from the weekend. Again, one of the biggest brackets, one of the biggest social media weekends that we have. But before we do that, how we doing around the horn? Void, start with the guest. How you doing, Void? What's going on?
Oh, in general? I'm good.
Yeah, man. Talk about yourself, bro. Go off.
I've been playing a lot of Marvel Rivals, of course, which has been fun. But, of course, still love watching Smash. And, yeah, I mean, last weekend was just... last weekend was great. Weekend before that was great. I'm sure you guys already talked about Level Up.
Yeah.
I mean, dude. Kagaribi, top 192, not even that, top like 256, like banger after banger after banger.
Essentially right when it got to top, right when sets got to best of five, absolutely crazy. That's when all the stuff started going down. So yeah, it was dope. And it was cool. I mean, this time, me and Void have been to a Kagaribi in person, so definitely felt the FOMO, but it was cool just watching history go down. You know what I mean? Like, most stacked tournament. It was cool to watch party. We actually watch partied on the Throne GG on Twitch. And we did a watch party there. It was really fun. And Void came through, hung out a little bit. We had Pink, we had Has, Bam. But it, like, majority of the time it was me and TK. But yeah.
Saying we had Bam is
we did generous. Have Bam. He was there.
He is factually correct, but you know,
he was there. Yeah,
he did show up. yeah, dude, I love doing that watch party. I thought it was super fun. I'm always watching those tournaments anyway. Usually it's on Phil's stream, so it's like a watch party of one, and it's Philip, which is great. He does great watch parties, but I thought it was so fun to hang out and talk about, like, goof around and talk about Smash and, like, you know, just kind of couch style commentary like we do at Throne or like we used to do. Sorry, my dog's working. Hold up. Like we used to do at Summit. There we go. See, good save. But yeah, I thought it was great, man. I had such a blast, dude. It was an amazing time. I'm still paying for it. I think my sleep schedule has not bounced back. Falling asleep when the sun is rising and the birds are chirping, not for me, man. I don't know. How you doing, Marcus? What's going on?
Dude, shout out to all the East Coasters, bro. You guys sleep
damn. Bro, the whole time, we're doing this watch party, Chuck's just like, y'all tired? What?
I'm ready to roll.
Bro. Charles, it was like 9 p.m. for him, by the way. It was like 4:30 in the morning, and Charles was like, guys, it's like 8:30 here. I feel great.
I was like,
bro, yo, around 10, though, I started getting a little sleepy. Not
you
lie.
Did get, you're like, oh, man, I need an energy drink. It's like 10:30.
I was like, what? We're sitting there. Like,
I usually go to sleep around 8 or 9 so I can go to the gym at like 5 a.m. To be fair.
Okay.
To be fair. So it was pretty late for me, all right?
Anyway, I'm good. I watched pretty much all of that tournament and all of, like, the pre-locals and everything leading up to it. I'm like weirdly torn because I'm like kind of sad, but I'm kind of happy because I was like, Gavin's probably going to do well. I did say that he would top 8 Kagaribi 2 weeks ago. I did say that. I said he wouldn't top 8 Level Up, but I said he would top 8 Kagaribi.
I felt good about that too, to be honest with you, which we can talk about in more detail.
Really strange, but I
felt really good about him going into Kagaribi, and I had told him that too. Like, I was feeling really good. He having a good bracket a little bit, or potentially having a good bracket if no big upsets, that does help. And I think he does, like, sorry, I guess we're diving into it now, but when he's in a mode where he can just sit and play and, like, really lock in, like when he won Summit, right? Like, all he was doing was playing Smash for like 5 or 6 days straight. I just think he really thrives in that environment. He's like one of the best, you know, learners, and I think he takes a while to warm up too, is a thing with him. I don't know if that's like factual or just something I kind of feel as his friend and someone who roots for him. But I feel like if he flies in and like this happened at Level Up, actually, I didn't even think about that, but his flight got messed up and he flew in the day of, and like, he was out of his routine. I just think for him, it's tough to readjust and bounce back. Not that he can't, but then when he went to Kagaribi, I think he had more time. But then there's also like the time zone adjustment and all this other shit that you need to think about. But I knew if he was in there and he was in the zone, he was playing a lot, that there was a good chance he would do well. So yeah. That's how I felt, at least. And
it was a good watch. It was a good watch for sure. Just like Haslam still bouncing back on sleep schedule is, I mean, it was already bad before, but I just feel like it got even worse. Like, bro, those days were ending at like 7 a.m. I was like, what's going on? But it was good. It was a good watch. It's weird because I feel like at Level Up, and like, it was like kind of expected to happen because it's in Japan, you know, so there's more Japanese players, so it's more likely for them to make top eight. But I really thought NA was going to come through, man. Like, I was I just kept saying, bro, honestly, like, it's not even going to be that many Japanese players in top eight.
It was looking good day one.
It was, man.
Looking like, good day one.
Like, Light was playing insane day one, and then you just loaded up day two, and it was like, this not to the infinity. Same
mm-hmm. And beyond.
It's not his fault he ran into a Space Ranger.
Yeah, and then Leo, like, I guess his Joker was playing bad day two, and it's like, come on, like, that's your bread and butter, and like the
age. But good enough to beat Spargo, it was like literal recipe for. Well, like, I guess Leo just playing in general, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. It just sucked to see Spargo get eliminated at 33rd, and then Leo not do a run afterwards. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm not saying that Spargo guarantee would have had a crazier run. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I just think both of them. They weren't playing as good as they were playing day one, so it's just kind of unfortunate, and maybe the pressure got to him. But yeah, I do want to get more into Kagaribi, but I do want to go over some YouTube comments as well. So
all right,
because that is something that I do like. You guys mentioned in the comments that you guys like it, so encourage more engagement, and we get to shout out some of the top comments. So the first one. So we did have Mars as a guest, so it was really fun. It's not Tweet Talks today, it's Mars.
I think
Mansion.
Mars had you guys as the guests, and he was the host, it appears. So
yes. Void voices.
Ooh, void.
Yeah, voices. All right. Like, so that. Comments, yeah. What is this one? What should it be called? Jeez.
The guys in my head. I can hear them.
Void voices.
They're speaking to me.
Void voices. That's insane. Something you do that I like is anytime someone types void in a tweet, you just go, let's go void. You reply to them. It has nothing to do with them. I just see some random ass tweet from someone I've never heard of, and it's just you, let's go void. And they get like 8 likes on their tweet, and you get like another tweet, and you get like 200. It's like,
that's so funny.
I enjoy it, yes.
There was one time recently, I think it was like a really sad tweet, and I was just like, ooh.
Commit to the bit. Send. Today. Maybe it would make them feel better. I don't know.
Good.
Yeah, we had a couple more comments too. Oh, this one, I just thought it was funny, but yeah, I do be doing this.
Okay.
Like, there's like situations that aren't even about Smash Brothers, and it's like real life, and I'll either explain it via Smash or like specifically if you're playing Fox McCloud.
So like, so when you're doing work around your mom's house and you're like, okay, so I'm fixing this HVAC unit, and it's like if Fox is putting you into a check chase and I need to just like that. Is that what you do?
No, more of like, oh, I had to crawl into this house and it was such a shitty experience that it's like getting edge guarded as Fox. Like, you just have no option and your opponent's playing well and you're just going to have a bad time. Kind of like just one off the top of my head.
Work today wasn't as bad as playing Fox in Smash 4. So.
Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah. And I'll make it even multi-game. I want them to do Tweak Stocks and talk about Tweak's run at Kagaribi. Well, we're definitely
Tweak Stocks. Okay, I don't like. I thought it was stocks, like his stocks and like his lives in Smash. Not like we're stalking him. No, we weren't stalking him. We were watching him play. Everyone was doing it. What the heck?
All right, and then we got Tweak. I'm going to need you to show up and show out at Kagaribi, which is exactly what Tweak did. You know, one thing I actually do want to talk about, since this is Tweaks podcast is Tweaks tweet after the tournament. I think a lot of people are like kind of knee-jerk reaction, but I guess for me, it doesn't feel as a knee-jerk reaction because I get like for us, we know Tweak personally. So I don't think it's too crazy for us, but I can understand if you don't know Tweak personally and seeing Tweak tweet something like that is pretty like wild since Tweak doesn't tweet that much anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here, let me get the link for that.
We're going to pull that one up. Yeah. It was interesting because I read it and it's funny because Void, actually, you read it one way as well. And I think it might be a little ambiguous because he himself might, and truly, I haven't talked to him about it. So we don't have like insider baseball knowledge here. Or at least as far as I know, none of us do. But I don't know how he's really feeling about it. And his tweet to me was a little ambiguous, but people ran with it and they're like, damn, Tweak, he's done playing Smash forever. I was like, wait, when did that happen? I was like, uh-oh, what happened? And I was like, oh, off of that tweet? So I'll read it word for word with the punctuation he used, which, ooh, I think is key. Okay. GGs. I told myself this Japan trip would be
the comma
my last.
Already. What?
That's what the pause.
Pause.
What the?
The no. Audible pause.
I'm not going to say comma.
Got to say comma.
GGs. Comma. Then you pause. That's what a comma is. No, that's what a comma is.
No, like
GGs, comma.
There we go.
Nice.
GGs, comma. I told myself. See, it's a confusing tweet. GGs, comma. I told myself this Japan trip would be my last time playing in Ultimate tournaments, comma. But I'm not entirely sure what the future is for me. I've been going through a lot, as those close to me know. So thank you to everyone who's made this trip amazing. Smash is my outlet and my art form, comma. And I'm glad so many of you appreciate it, period. True. So people took that and they were like, he's retired. He's done. Like,
it's over.
And I was like, that is not what I got from that. I obviously got and like you said, Charles, like he doesn't express himself on social media a whole lot. He kind of keeps to himself. So him saying anything at all, I think is a, you know, it's something for sure. Mm-hmm. But to me, I didn't read that as like, wow, he's definitely officially like retired. Like, we're going to see him play again at Kowloon. That's the plan.
Literally
at least,
the next
right?
weekend.
Yeah. But because Void kind of had a different take on it, and he's been a little more in the perspective, a little more than some of us, at being a top player and what this might mean or be closer to connected to how Gavin's feeling. But I took it as like he's just feeling some sort of way right now and he might need to take a break or he might. I don't think he's sure. I think he has these feelings and he's trying to sort them out, and he made a social media post, and I think that's where we're at. I don't think anything's like locked in. Like, I think if he's retired or done competing, we will know. And maybe there's also a chance that because we do know him, we're on Hopium and we're like, oh, that's not what that means. And that is possible. I admit that. You know, there's always a lot of different ways to read tweets and whatever. But I do think it's ambiguous at best. So I don't know what you thought, Void.
Yeah, it's like, so I didn't know he was going to Kowloon. I was actually going to ask, and I just forgot to bring it up over and over. But that for sure, like, I know because Charles is saying, well, clearly he's not retiring. Well, if the Japan trip is still going on, right? He mentioned even in the tweet, this Japan trip was going to be my last time playing Ultimate Tournaments. Japan trip's still happening. And maybe he's feeling conflicted because he did well at Kagaribi. Maybe he's feeling conflicted because he's, like, having a good, like, it's really hard to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of, like, presenting that side of yourself publicly, especially as Tweak, like, I never thought I'd hear Tweak talk about being done playing an Ultimate tournament, but I would definitely hear Tweak talk about how much he, like, doesn't enjoy the game that much or the meta and stuff like that. So I think you can definitely play the game and not enjoy it, but for Tweak to be at a point where he's not sure what his future holds, that's a little worrying for me as a viewer who likes to watch Tweak.
As someone who knows the guy and talks to him a lot, I don't think that he is immediately retiring after this Japan trip. But I do believe that that is something that he is considering. It's something that people should maybe be looking forward to. Because as you've all said, he doesn't really say things like that. And for someone who lives and breathes Smash and has done it for 10 years, he has never presented the idea of quitting. He has hated a lot of games and a lot of metas and a lot of matchups, and he would always work his way through and keep fighting and trying to figure it out. But there's never been a time where he said, I'm done trying to figure it out. And it feels like he's starting to consider the possibility of not trying to figure it out anymore, which, I mean, hey, life happens, man. You cannot play forever. Again, I still think he's going to end up going to some things. But I think as someone who has, and this is me, and maybe Void can speak to this as well, as someone who has been very good at the video game and thought that they would play it for what feels like your entire life, the moment that idea creeps into your head, like, I think I'm going to quit, it doesn't go away. It really doesn't. Like, you're going to think about it more and more. Anytime a bad performance happens, you're not going to want to. Anytime you're not enjoying the game when you're practicing, you're just, why am I even doing this? Like, it's going to creep into your head, and you're going to keep thinking about it for, well, kind of until you quit. The thing is, he did say ultimate. And that is something that I think people are like, bro, he's just done. I mean, there's maybe a new game. We haven't seen anything, but there's probably going to be one. And he loves Smash Brothers. The thing is, once you quit, it's really hard to get back in. It's really, really difficult to get back in. So we'll see. I mean, that's typical Gavin, cryptic man. You won't know until you know.
Yeah.
He won't know until he knows.
Yes. And I think that's a good way to put it, is we'll just see. Because maybe that is exactly what it means. And like I said, I think he's working through the process is what I think it is. Like, that's how it kind of read to me, just from knowing him. I would fucking love to talk to him about it. Maybe I'll shoot him a text, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it right now. So I just want him to. I just want him to have a good time in Japan. Is where my priorities are as a friend. So, yeah. Well, hey, good news, guys. He has a podcast, so maybe he'll tell us more when he comes back to said podcast. So that would be cool when he's a guest on Mars Mentions or whatever.
I'd love to hear Void's experience of just pivoting from Smash to content. I mean, that's like, kind of like quote unquote retiring from competition in Smash, right? How was your experience? Because Pink explained his, and I think for me and Haz, it was more of like us giving up player ambitions for commentary ambitions. So it doesn't really, I don't think the experience really lines up there in terms of me and Haz's side, but I'd love to hear, like, again, if Pink wants to put in or say more, or Void's experiences just going through that retiring phase from competition in Smash specifically. Obviously, yeah. Still a game, but.
Well, I'm sure you guys know a lot of the reasons. Like, competing has always been hard for me. I have a ton of tournament nerves. It sucks. And there was a point for me when, like, going to the tournament did not outweigh dealing with those nerves. Just the landscape is different. The people I hang out with is different. So it wasn't too much about the game, really. So it's a little harder for me to relate. Because, like, even nowadays, I mean, I didn't like the game for some spots. Currently, I think the game's pretty fun. But ultimately, I just didn't have a reason to go to tournaments and enjoy it there. And then, like, I don't really play against people online. So I'm like, I'm just not really consuming the game as much as I used to. So the competing in Smash side kind of, like, fell out a little more naturally. It wasn't something that I super, like, decided on.
Since it was quarantine as well, I think I'm trying to, like, think back on the... Now it's starting to, you're like kind of sparking my memory, but yeah, this happened during quarantine, and essentially you were like, oh wow, I didn't know my life could be like this when if I don't go to tournaments and I stay home and make content, this is how things are. And you're like,
I have a regular sleep schedule. Correct. I'm not having like
you got sick a lot.
Sleep paralysis. Yeah. I used to get sick all the time. Now I don't get
you had sleep paralysis. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All the time?
All the time.
Bro.
I had one like a couple of days ago where EE woke me up from the bathroom and he's like, it's not yet void. And he just disappeared into the bathroom. And then I just like, oh, that wasn't actually Phil, huh?
It was.
It might have been.
He used your sleep paralysis demon.
Yeah. I didn't see him for 2 days after that. I was convinced.
He was in the bathroom. We know where he was.
In the bathroom.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for me, because that's one thing you did bring up. From Tweak's tweet, it looks like there is more than just like the Smash side of things going into this decision.
Mm-hmm.
So I can relate to that a lot. You know, it's really hard to compete, especially at like the tippity top level when other things aren't going like the best. And, you know, sometimes it's just good to take a step back and start focusing on, you know, making sure that part of your life is good. Because if he does do that, you know, and I don't know what's happening, if something is happening, but if there is and that gets fixed and like, becomes phenomenal, who knows? New Smash game, Tweak back on top, baby.
Yeah. And
yeah, I like the idea of essentially kind of doing a reset in life, so to speak.
Yeah.
If that is something he's like thinking about. But like, I think for a lot of competitors, I don't think you necessarily have to compete at the end of Smash 4 to be competitive in Ultimate. I think, mm-hmm. at least like from what I saw in SoCal, the players that stayed and grinded the 12-man locals at Wednesday night fights and stuff, they were really good going into Ultimate. I think that does help. I think when you're a caliber of player, like something like Tweak that just has a ton of experience and all this other stuff, you can take something like a break towards the end of the meta and wait for the next Smash game. He could still grind it and play it, but I think traveling to tournaments is something a lot of people just underestimate how stressful it is, right? Whether you have any kind of conditions that, you know, happen while you're traveling, or it's like, oh, you're traveling and like it changes day-to-day scenarios, right? So if you're a routinic person, always that could also break your routine. There's like health things that come into play, right? There's also if you have pets or a significant other, right? That's also coming into play. So there's a lot of pieces being juggled around. And also like if you have a team, you're also planning your travels with said team. Like there's a lot of management and stuff going on top of the content and podcasts and all this other stuff, right? So yeah, I mean, even for myself, I'm not a pro player I'm back. But just for me, like I'm not a pro player or anything, but I'm taking care of a lot of business just at home right now, hoping that I can take care of everything before the next Smash game. Because I would like to be part of the next Smash game in terms of commentating and content or whatever, and just like being involved with players and tournaments. But just getting everything in life straight now, so when that does come through, it's like, okay, cool, everything else you're is ready.
For me, there's two things I've noticed about Gavin, and this kind of happened with me, so it could be different, but there's something I like to call soft retiring. Okay, I soft retired a very long time ago. I realized that I've said this plenty of times. I realized that I wanted to be more of a family man than I wanted to be the best player in the world. I got married. I just started my life, all that. Like, that was when I retired. My ambition of being the best in the world had been overtaken by something else. I think Gavin is currently in the process of soft retiring because he's starting to realize, well, okay, I hate this game. If I'm not doing well, what happens? If things go wrong with LG, what happens? What skills do I have? Like, he's literally starting to think about his future, and he's like, wait a second. Like, too many bad things were happening as far as tournaments went for him to feel like this would be sustainable. Because yes, he has like the content, and he doesn't like doing the content. Yes, he has like this podcast and his LG sponsorship, but like for him, it's always been about tournaments. So if those aren't going well and they're continuously not going well, and he doesn't like the game, he's like, okay, well, now what? Like he just thought about it. He's like, okay, ooh, terms. now what?
Terms, mom.
And for him to put that tweet out, that's my brain going, oh my gosh, he's self-retiring. The other thing that really had me like, you might be starting the process is he won't. Smash 4 Gavin would pick up a character if it meant winning. He keeps saying that he will, but he will not. Going into the next game, he says that he will. I don't think he will. I don't think he will. He's going to play who he wants to play. And
no, I think he will.
I
no,
absolutely I object. Not.
Absolutely not.
I don't think he will.
I don't.
I was thinking about this
before because I think if it were if that were the case, he would have done it already in this game. He definitely would have.
He doesn't want to do it because the character is like really whack.
Which character?
Steve. What? Cloud? If you're gonna play the best character in the are you saying just like a good enough character to win?
Anything would pick up characters to win. And there are Cloud. Characters that he likes. He likes Wolf. Wolf would help. He likes Cloud. Cloud-ish. Cloud will help. Like, there are characters that he likes that he wants to play Diddy Kong, and that's fine. But I know Smash 4 Gavin, and he played Cloud Donkey Kong, and then he picked up Bayonetta. Like, he had a good enough lineup, and then he picked up another character to make his lineup even better. And,
well... He really liked her too, like the way she played. Like, if he didn't feel like he was, I think if he felt
that's
like
that's also true.
I think if he felt like if he was forcing it, it wouldn't have stayed the same,
right? Right. Do you, but like, if that's the case, you feel like he doesn't like any of the characters he could pick up in Ultimate?
Truthfully, probably not, to be honest with you.
Hard to tell what that guy likes.
I can't see a world where there's. And he won't, and there's also like he won't give every character a shot. Like before, he would give a character a shot. Some characters is like, I don't like this character, I'm not doing it. I'm like, really? That's so strange. Because if that's the, like, why did he give Bayonetta a shot? Just randomly gave her a shot. So
I don't know. Turn Smash 4, see if it would work.
Because there was like 10 playable characters in Smash 4. Shit, you're going to play all of them. I'll tell you right now, as someone who competed in Smash 4, like if you ever competed in Smash 4, you tried out all the meta characters. There wasn't a lot. Like,
there was a lot less of them. Yeah.
Yes. There's way less. Like in Ultimate.
That's true. Yes.
Yes. In Ultimate, like, holy crap. And like how different the play styles are. Like Smash 4, like, this sounds weird, but like in Smash 4, the good characters felt like Smash characters. Like, it was the only weird one was Cloud getting meter and then Bayonetta being a Marvel character, but like excluding Ryu. The two like DLC characters, and then like even Ryu was honestly, let's be real, Ryu was like a fringe. Like, when I played against Ryu and I lost to Ryu in tournament, I was like, you're not trying to win the tournament, so I don't like really care or respect you, so it's whatever. Like, you weren't like, no one picked Ryu and like was like, I'm trying to be the best player in the world. Like, you didn't seriously think you were gonna do that with Ryu. I'm giving it a buck.
In that I'm keeping category it of characters.
Yes, absolutely. You're not trying to win the tournament, bro. You're just trying to be like a good Ryu player.
I know where you're coming from, and I've heard you say this so many times, Charles, about so many characters in Smash 4 after MSMs and Wednesday Night Fights.
Bro, you're not trying to win.
Ryu was not in that category of characters during Smash 4. Ryu was like a top 10 character. That's not bad.
I can't see a Ryu player beating all the Bayos to win like a fucking SP tier. Like, that's just not like, I'm sorry. That's impossible.
The main thing I was pointing out is that he's really fucking weird and not a normal Smash character. He's literally just a weird
character.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Like competitively viable, very on Smash.
I think Ryu
is kind of Smash.
He's Smash. Really? In Smash 4, he was a Smash character. Yes, absolutely. You just had fucking inputs. What? It's a Smash character with inputs. No auto turnaround.
Focus is so fucking weird. Like, I don't know. He felt really weird to me.
Maybe it's because I just dabbled in Street Fighter 4. So to me, like, when I started, like, Ryu came out and I was, like, screwing around with him, I was like, feels like a Smash character with fucking Street Fighter. Like focus was the only thing that was weird.
Played some Street Fighter in my time.
I think it's funny that the justification of he feels like a Smash character is I played Street Fighter 4.
Okay. Okay.
I'm just saying, like, I don't know. It was weird.
Ryu is spacing back air on my shield in Smash 4. He does not do that in Ultimate. He is not, like, he can kind of do it, but, like, not really. Yeah. Like, when I'm playing neutral in Smash 4 against the Ryu, I'm like, okay, space back air, run up Nair. Like, he's doing Smash character shit. And then he hits me and does all the Street Fighter shit. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, like, his defense, he had a frame one out that a multi-hit fucks up. Like, okay, cool. He has, like, a niche thing. Other than that, it's fucking bullshit inputs that he can do, like, block strings, like, back air shore you and be like, oh, you can't grab that and you die if you grab it, or I shield break you or whatever.
Matching,
like,
down tilt was interesting. Collarbone obviously having, I don't know, but we just don't agree. I think he was strange compared to, like, he's not Mario, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, like, I think, I guess I'm just comparing him to Ultimate Ryu. And I think Ultimate Ryu feels like way more like a fighting game character to me in Smash. Whereas in Smash 4, I feel like Ryu is like a fighting character that got put into Smash and is tried to, like, they try to make him a Smash character.
Yeah. I'm that just saying that I'm just saying in Smash 4, without a comparison to Ultimate that wasn't out yet, that he felt incredibly strange when it first was released.
You guys think Rosalina felt strange? I'm surprised nobody said that. Rosalina as a Smash 4, like, top tier. I'll say she felt strange.
That was a weird character.
To me, I think Rosa is more strange than Ryu. To me. Because because you're puppeteering something. And, like, I don't think that was ever in Smash, right? I think that was the first time.
Ice Climbers were, like, the closest.
Kind of,
Remind me of, like, they're settling on Ice Climbers, basically. Is
I guess, Maybe it does feel more Smash. But Haz, I do agree with you. Like, Ryu felt different from the rest of the cast.
Yeah,
so, like, exactly. In that sense, I was definitely wrong. Or, like, we agree on that point. But I think I was just comparing it to Ultimate Ryu, where Ultimate Ryu feels more like fighting game character because of auto turnaround and all that other stuff. And, like, they also just added more inputs in Ultimate. Like, Crescent Kick and all this other shit. Like, there wasn't that many inputs in Smash 4. Like, there was, like...
Mashing down tilt.
It was kind of just, like, up tilt, up tilt, run, like, Walker. Like, to me, the character was very... Your game plan was fairly simple.
Yeah.
It wasn't impressive at all. So, very simple. Right. Very easy. Like...
Mega Man felt weird too. Okay, let's not go down this rabbit hole.
we're definitely going down a rabbit hole.
Kagaribi. Well, let's come back to reality.
Let's bring it back.
We don't know. Wait,
my
doing.
One point I wanted to say about Gavin is he was lucky enough that the meta character, like, the characters he liked, were good enough to win. But I think, like, this is me, just my observation and the time I've spent with Gavin, and this is my guess, like, my read on him on the next Smash game. I think Gavin likes to be the innovator of something. I think the most exciting part of the game is the beginning part of the game for Gavin, because I just personally think of, I've met a lot of people that play Smash, and in terms of, like, base, I don't know what to call this, but, like, Smash IQ, in terms of, like, when someone grabs the sticks and they're going into a new platform fighter or Smash game or whatever, right? And they want to figure it out. And you as a competitor in this phase, it's like the gold rush phase. It's like, holy crap. It's like the meta's not defined, but the most amount of players that are going to play this game in the history of this game is right now. The game just dropped. First year matters the most. And, like, I think it's really cool if you can be the highest rank later on in a game. And, like, technically, yes, it is harder, but the level of competition is not. Like, just if I want to say level of competition is very vague. So when I say level of competition, like, the actual sheer number of people that are invested into this game trying to win. So that's what I mean by level of competition, because that can be very vague, and that could be like, oh, the actual, like, action per minute or yada, yada, yada. Like, the game's more developed and the matchups are more developed and the execution's harder or whatever. No, the cool thing about the first year of Smash, it is kind of about that, but it's also knowing how to leverage that. And if it's even, like, worth your time to invest into a tech that could be fucking useless, that could only happen once every 20 games in a tournament. And if you break down the math like that, you're just wasting your time, and you could be, like, grinding matchups or whatever, right? So also utilizing your time in the fullest in the beginning of the meta. So because of this, I think even with, like, a character like PT, I don't know if this is the reason why he did it, but it's like he saw this character and he was like, okay, I think this character can win. Or I'm assuming he thought this. But I'm assuming he thought, hey, this character can win. I'm going to pick the character up and show the world that this character doesn't just get you in a top 64 or top 32. Like, you can win tournaments with this character. The character's that good, right? So I think for Gavin, there's a bit more excitement, even though even if he's just playing a character where it's like, okay, I'm just going to play this character just to win, being the first person to figure out that that character is that strong just to win, I think holds enough merit to like have Gavin interested in doing it. I think he will start with the characters he likes. That is the trend that I've seen throughout the Smash games, right? It's like he starts with characters he likes and see if he can make them work. And then he has to deduce if he can, if that's possible or not. Because, like, he's not a Fire Emblem fan. Bro used Roy to win a tournament. So you can't tell me that he has never, like, used a character from a franchise he doesn't like. And maybe to him, Roy is more of a Smash character or whatever. But all I know is that he's not the biggest Fire Emblem fan. And I saw him use a Fire Emblem character to win a tournament. So he will use characters that he might not be the biggest fan of the franchise, but he knows that, like, hey, I'm fighting up against ZSS. I'm going to use Roy, and it's a good matchup. And he won. And, like, he has been known for being able to, and this is what I mean by, like, I think he has high Smash IQ because he has shown in and won with multiple characters. I think that is something on a resume. If you want to talk about someone's skill in a platform fighter, if they can win tournaments that are very stacked with different characters, it's like, okay, you can see that they can diversify their skills, and it's like, I'm not just using this one character because it can do X, Y, or Z to win. So I think that that aspect in itself will at least help Gavin gravitate towards just picking a character to win. But that's just my theory. I don't know, but that this is how I think about it.
Yeah. I think last note is just like, I don't know. I don't want to really speak for Gavin, especially on his own podcast, for what he meant. My point was people were tweeting like the guy fucking died. Yeah, that was just weird. Made a vague tweet. Definitely weird. So my main point isn't like how he feels or doesn't. I'm just saying I thought it was kind of vague, and I think we'll see what he says. I'm excited to hear from him, obviously, and whatever he does. And he's got our support, obviously, going forward from the boys here at Tweet Talks at Void. What do we say? Void.
Void's voices.
Voices. Thank you.
Not Void voices. Void's voices. Like apostrophe voices. S. Yeah. Void's voices. We are Void's voices.
So, yeah, speaking of Gav, I think obviously we got to talk about Kagarebe results, him and everyone else. But obviously, he was kind of the protagonist of this one for a while.
Kind
well, NA protagonist.
He's right. My, you know what's funny is he's actually my second favorite storyline for that tournament. He's not even my favorite.
He's not even my favorite. My favorite was.
I think Buzz we have Lightyear. The same one.
We might. All right, on three. One, two, three. Riddles. Buzz Lightyear.
Okay, never mind.
Okay, yeah.
No, Riddles is my favorite part of that tournament.
I wish we got top eight, man.
Riddles is easily my favorite part of that tournament, bro. Yeah. He just, because for me, it was someone who has been struggling with their results, struggling with how much they cared about the game, deciding this is actually going to be my last stream. Like Riddles and Tweak, if you look at what they said, those are completely different. Riddles is like, this is my last one.
Yeah.
Tweak is like, I don't know what's going on, but I told myself it would be. You know, that's like, those are very different. Riddles was like, this is my last hurrah, and I'm just gonna try my best. And he was getting farmed for months on end, and then he just shows up and he's like, wait a second, I just remembered I'm that guy, and I've always been that guy, and I needed to remind y'all that I'm that guy. And that's crazy, because that was this is easily the hardest tournament of all time in Smash, at least. I kind of want to like do some dive and see if it's the hardest tournament of any game. How would I even know that? I don't know. Anyway, but it
good content.
Yeah, I know, right?
I like that. That's good.
But it's one of the hardest tournaments ever, and he just shows up and just starts beating people. It's not like he was beating like Scrubs. Like he beat Spargo.
Bro, he hit Spargo with Gates of Hell. Gates of Hell spam. Yeah. Go. And it's dude, Spargo's characters, and it's kind of, man, Spargo's lineup just sucks in a sense where it like it's so hard to watch someone just lose to Gates of Hell and Min Min. Like those two things are just a death sentence to Spargo's character lineup.
Yeah. Which sometimes you need good pockets, you know, when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah. Crazy thing is, he does have a pocket.
Yeah, he has
two characters. He
has other characters, yeah.
He has a Roy too, but like,
is Roy, is Corrin. I mean, if he, I think he's good enough that where if he just decided to pull it out, like it would do well, especially because I know Corrin is like known to do pretty well against Kazuya, just like through the frame trapping and like getting the stocks pretty early, and like being able to pin the all that stuff. So I was shocked he didn't try it, but. Once he went down 2-0, like, you're going to stick to your guns, right? If you're going to try it, you're probably going to try a game two. So, but yeah, that Riddles run, man, I was very happy to see him go out the way he went out, and he didn't just show up and just, like, whatever. Like, this is my last event. Like, I'm not really going to give it my all. Like, and that's the type of guy Riddles is, and it's really cool to see that, like, through his gameplay. We know he's going to have a lot of success in Street Fighter VI, and he's already having success, so... I wish he made top eight. Yeah, I mean, he didn't, but so man, close. That was a good run. That's my guy.
Maybe Carmelo too. Agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
My guy as well. Beating Carmelo in a game five after beating Riddles game five, and that was the Kazuya Terry back to back mix. Like, you're right, Marcus. That was an incredible run. But then he got a little bracket. What's that?
Big Gav, man.
Well, I was going to talk about Wrath, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Wrath had the opposite experience where it's like, bro, this is the best bracket I've ever seen in my life. I am, and I don't, again, it's not just bracket luck, because this is a guy who goes to 1,000 tournaments, plays in one of the best, most competitive regions, and goes all the time against people who know how to beat his character's ass, and is a really consistent player and has been for a really long time. So when he had, you make your own luck is how I feel about it. His bracket was good because he is a master of a very, very, very good character. The bracket presented itself to him. He didn't get upset. He made winner's top eight, which is insane because not even Sonic's made winner top eight with the same character.
Yep.
So crazy to me.
I know, man.
Bro, we knew T was going to be his downfall, man. Like, we knew it. Like,
okay. Yes, but I still was like, Sonics is getting into losers top eight. I was so
I was very confident
about that. I was so confident. And then Diamond Ferret 50 and Sonic the Hedgehog can't recover. Sonic the Hedgehog with double jump. Crazy. I figured out what the Patreon content is going to be. I am going to go on a savage ass Steve rant, and I am going to take screenshots and show VODs and just be like, literally, what do you do here? I'm just going to bitch about Steve. And I know, I still need a little bit of time because we're recording this a little later. So I just got home from work, but I need time to, like, there are very specific scenarios that I want to break down.
Well, that's
like, I am going to get very nerdy about it. It's not going to be just me like saying this character carries people. I'm going to break down how they're carrying them, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think you have some of the tweets from this weekend, Charles, in the top. I think that's a good transition into the players, or character representation across. I think we have a top 128, maybe top 64. Is that the two parts of the bracket that we have?
I think it's 192 and 64.
You're talking about the stats in terms of character. Rose Bloom.
Yeah.
Shouts to Rose Bloom doing mad work on Twitter, getting all these statistics. And okay, so in a previous episode, I talked about top 190. What is this? 192? So top 192, I predicted. Now, this is not a hot take, obviously. Like, I predicted the character that would be the most prevalent in this top 192 would be Steve. And I gave a number. And I gave a really exaggerated high number. But it is crazy that it almost got there.
You said,
I guess, 22. I said 22 Steve players and 192. There is 14. I didn't even think it would get this high. I was just spitting out 22 just to be a troll, but like 14.
The crazy thing about that too, Charles, is that a lot of the good Steves are on the same side of the bracket as each other.
That's the crazy thing. This is with them seeding all the Steves to fight each other.
W Kagaribi, by the way.
Yeah, shout out to Kagaribi. Like, obviously they did that on purpose. So like all the Steves would take each other out, so there wouldn't be too many Steves going anywhere. So shout out to damn good seeding.
I brought this up when we were streaming. Was that on our podcast or somewhere where someone said there should only be one Steve allowed in bracket, and the way we do it is they all play each other in one super Steve bracket, and whoever wins that gets to play in a regular bracket? That's basically what fucking happened here. Like, really close to what happened here.
Funny.
A really funny idea. I wish I knew who said that, because that is such a hilarious idea.
We might have to come up with a new Steve loser bracket. So, because there did, like, we did get some overdraft. Like, a Steve did get in through losers. Didn't expect that one to happen. But, Carmelo, you know, next time we can prevent that, just having a losers bracket that has all the Steves, and then at the end you fight Spargo. Even if Spargo's in where, he just dips down there real quick, takes out the last Steve, and then he goes back to where he was. Yeah. There you go.
Good God.
And if you win,
if you beat Spargo with Steve, all right, you're nice with it. I'll admit it. You beat Spargo with Steve, all right. Then you got it.
Let's talk about Gav a little bit here. The set to start with is him versus Snow, I think.
Brother. Can we talk about his bracket? Or like, we're going to talk about his bracket in general, but I think he rolled a pretty good bracket in general.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So I will say, I feel like Mario's been a little tricky for him. Like, I think Kurama's given him hard times, like pushed him to like game five.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. But if you
don't lose to Mario, bro.
But dude, okay.
Think about the other characters he can get. Like, I think any character where it's like, oh, he's pretty good, or he's like kind of shaky, that's great.
But it's not like he got Jazzo, you know what I mean? It's not like he got Ken or something. Like it's good. But it's still Mario. I don't know. He's scary, man. In a bracket, I don't know. Maybe I'd just be scared for Gavin. But he won that one. That was game five.
It was
super
game five,
last hit. Like, let's not act like he walked away from that. Oh well, that was easy. Yeah. But then what did happen is that he did get Dormigi, which is incredibly fortunate for him. That 2-3-0s or was it 3-1 in losers?
I believe it was double
3-1 in losers.
Think it was 3-1 in
losers. He lost the first game. He lost the first game in losers. He put his headset on and he locked in.
And you could say Shutan is a good pick history. However, he lost to him the last time they played, which was incredibly surprising. So I knew my man would be prepared and ready. Like, I knew, because he does not like losing. So I knew he would bounce back. I was confident in that one, but also a little nervous because Shutan had won the last one, and it looked fucking hard. He was getting hit really hard at Genesis by Shutan's Olimar. Like, it just it looked fucking hard. So, like, yes, on paper, mathematically, all that, great bracket.
Yeah.
Mentally, though, you know what I mean? Like, close calls against Mario, just lost to Shutan. Dormigi, that's fine. Dormigi's on a hot streak, though, and was playing really well. Yeah. You know, it's a good matchup, etc. But, you know, he's still got to consider Dormigi probably wanted to win this tournament almost more than anyone on the planet. So it's like, it's still scary just because of who's on the other side, but obviously fine overall because of how it actually adds up. But those other two, especially Shutan, I was like, I obviously believe in him and think he's going to win, but there's like this little thing in the back of my head where I'm like, I'm scared just because the last time I thought he was going to roll Shutan, that absolutely did not happen, is all.
Gavin always, like, I call it the bracket. And I messaged him and said, Gavin, you have the bracket. He has these brackets where, like, he's supposed to play someone that should be very difficult. And then something happens. And then he plays Mario into Shattuck. I actually thought Shattuck was going to, like, beat Shutan and I thought Shattuck was going to end up being who he played in quarters. But I thought he was going to play Mario into, like, a favorable matchup into Shattuck. That's usually how he makes winners top eight at his tournaments. I don't know. It's just really strange that happens that way. And I thought because Sonics was on Akola's side, as long as Sonics beat Teeth, that Sonics was going to make winners side top eight. And Gavin was going to have to play Sonics. And I was like, oh, my gosh, he's about to make winners finals based on, like, this bracket, right? Obviously, that didn't happen. But when I saw level one got upset and I was like, okay, so he just has to play Snow into Dormigi into probably Shutan, like he's making winners top eight. Like, especially after I saw like his first set of the day, not against Snow, but against the Bayonetta, I was like, he's playing well enough. So he's probably not gonna lose. And I just don't expect him to lose to a Min-Min at this point. He's just very good at the matchup and whatever. So very good bracket for him. Honestly, I'm Hey, I thought he was going to get folded by Akola. Like, I thought he was locked in, right? But I thought it was going to be, like, him getting kind of cooked. That game one started, I said, who is this player? Mm-hmm. Wait, you have some fight in you against Steve. Like, I haven't seen this fight in a while. Like, normally you're in your head and you feel like this character is like unbeatable and they have like all these options. The character is unbeatable and has a lot of options, but like you still got to fight against it when you're competing, right? Like you do, like it's just you chose to do this. So I saw him employing the strategies. I was like, ooh, the barrels are back. You ain't been doing this in a few sets. Ooh, you're hitting the bottom block and like playing the situation out, or you're like doing a short hop banana toss over like a one low block. Like you're really locked into to how to play this out. And hey, I said, oh, hold on, Big Gav might get a dub. He lost that FD game.
Come on. Yeah,
it was the FD game, man.
It was the FD game.
And he still brought the game two. Game five, dude.
Yeah, and something I love about that set, you know, obviously wish he won and all that, but the masses, like how people feel about that set, were just like, we are so fucking impressed with the game plan and the execution that Tweak basically had put together for the general. Sorry, we cut out chat. I don't know if this is picking up in a weird spot, but the general, what the public opinion was afterwards, which I really appreciated seeing, is that Gavin's game plan was very sound, very clear, and very disciplined, which you have to be in this matchup. And we all saw what happened when he would chip away. Banana aerial, you know what I mean? That's all you get. Banana, that's it. You know what I mean? Down tilt, maybe no true follow-up, something. F tilt when you can, right? That's it. You mess up once, you get Steve up tilted. You monkey flip in a bad spot. You jump in and get parried in a bad spot. You're just going to lose a stock. So I just really appreciated how so many people appreciated what Gavin did, because he's clearly worked really hard in this matchup for a really long time. And you could see how it paid off in a really tight game five set. And it was just tough, man. It just didn't bounce his way in the end. It just sucked, which sucked to see, especially because he clearly worked so hard. But yeah, man, I don't know. I just appreciated that people appreciated what he was doing is kind of how I was feeling after.
Yeah, as somebody who I don't like watching Gavin fight Steve, I'll be honest. If Gavin gets a Steve in his bracket, I'm clocked out. But
sir,
there's something about the way it happened this time is like you can see the thought process and the mental energy towards creating the game plan that was working really well, even when it came to like fighting blocks, you know, how he wants to take space, where he's overshooting, which overshooting against Steve sounds like a death sentence. And I'm like, wait, but Gavin's kind of cooking, no? So I don't know. I thought it was a great set. I would have loved Gavin to do better. And, you know, there is a bunch of Steve hate in the world already. But I left that set being like, I watched some pretty good Smash Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, we got to give it up to Akola, bro. The kid just shows up when he needs to show up. Like, I know everybody, bro, but he's on Steve. And, like, he is. But he's doing it, man. Like, he's getting it done when nobody else can. He is.
And, yeah. Like, we hyped up Serp a lot going into this tournament, and he had a good tournament.
Yeah.
But he didn't win.
Tournament. Yeah.
But he didn't win.
I think out of the Steves, personally, I've been hyping up Anand and Serp in like the last couple of weeks, which, you know, sometimes it's scary because it's like, oh God, the Steves are going to get a form. But they've been playing pretty good lately. And then when I saw all the Steves and the Sonics were in the same side of bracket, I'm like, nobody's living this except Akola. Like, if any of the Steves live the bracket, it's going to be Akola.
Yeah.
Most consistent for sure. Anand absolutely stepped up their game recently. Always has been a really good and really sound player. I don't know what they did, but they have enhanced their game quite a bit, and it's been more consistent, which is great to see. And Serp lost to Sonic and losers. You know what I mean? One of the best players on the planet at that matchup. It is what it is.
Somebody's got to be the best Steve, right? To me, it's like, somebody's got to do it.
You're making Termy howl over there, Charles. Take it easy.
I just mentioned Steve in this household.
And people he started crazy. Barking.
Good job, Termy.
Well, and shout out to Carmelo, too. One of the newer Steves on the block, doing really well. And again, you know, obviously, Steve, not everyone's favorite character, I think is a fair thing to say. But with Carmelo, it's like there are so many other Steves that we probably would have picked to get top eight before them. But now we're seeing, you know, hey, who's Carmelo? When's it going to be Carmelo's turn? Got to beat Mia. That's going to take a little bit, I think, though. Another great player at the matchup, of course.
Dude, Mia in Japan is like a completely different player, man. Like, I don't know if it's just because he is very good against everyone in Japan or what, but like when I saw that he pretty much only had to play like Japanese players, I was like, bro, about to win this tournament. Mika's about to win this joy, man. Like,
I thought Mika was going to win after Gavin was out, and that's who I was rooting for. That's who I legit thought who was going to win. Like, shout outs to Alcola. Obviously, you know, Steve is very strong, but there's other bullshit characters in this game that can give Steve a run for his money. I don't think Steve wins every matchup. I don't think he's like that crazy. There are matchups he loses and stuff like that. So I don't know too much about Game & Watch. I'm not like super well studied on the game, but Game & Watch definitely showcases, hey, he's got tools to deal with Minecart. Yeah, hey, you have you get up B, and like the hit that you usually up B to use the intangibility to abuse that to hit Minecart, you usually don't get too much out of it. Like, you can kind of set up fair afterwards. It's not like getting up B out of shield while someone's grounded and you get like the up air chains and stuff like that. But I think Game & Watch has great tools in terms of game. To me, Game & Watch feels strong because Game & Watch has very strong advantage state. It's very similar to something like a Min Min advantage state. It's like your character's advantage state is clearly overtuned and you can make characters bleed that usually can't bleed. So it still applies to Steve, right? Like up air, falling up air against Anvil, super strong. Up B against Minecart, very strong. So yeah, I mean, shout outs to Akola still being able to adapt in that situation. Mia was up in the set, and I believe it was Akola. Yeah, it was destroying him. I believe it was, reverse 3-0 from Akola's side. So amazing adaptation, knowing where to clutch and stuff. And I just want to make it very clear, just because I hate a character doesn't mean I am not like going to give a player their roses. Like, I am very salty when it comes to that kind of stuff. And like, even like Smash 4 Bayo has caused me so much like physical pain, but I still give credit where it's due. And at the end of the day, we're all playing this game, and you know, Akola did an amazing job. His character is extremely strong, and obviously any competitor is going to abuse any character that they're good with, right? And Akola is extremely good with Steve. It was kind of in the questions in terms of like past tournament results Akola was still the best Steve, but I think this tournament kind of cemented it. Hey, you know, didn't have amazing tournaments, and hey, Akola, it is possible for Akola to place in the double digits. Holy shit, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Because it didn't happen before Level Up. So I mean, just shout outs to Japan in general. I think Japan traveled out to Level Up, and I think before Level Up Expo, it was a pretty common, you know, opinion that Japan was the strongest region. It's pretty obvious in terms of rankings and stuff like that. Level Up Japan didn't have the greatest performance, even though they still won the tournament. Dormigi got first place, but it was only one Japan player in top eight. And the story, I think Level Up really amplified the storyline coming into Kagaribi, because before, Kagaribi to me was just like, well, it's the most stacked tournament and it's in Japan, and Japan is currently the strongest region. So that was the baseline storyline for Kagaribi, for me at least. And to me, Civil War is just more exciting because the marketing and the hype built up Civil War to be the tournament it was, right? And Kagaribi felt like it was missing that. But I think Level Up gave it at least a little bit of more oomph when it came to storyline, where it's like, oh, Japan kind of faltered at this one tournament. Mia Akola at 33rd, that's kind of a big deal, right? So since we had that, the tournament felt a little bit more exciting. I wish NA showed up. Am I still lagging? Jeez. Okay. I wish NA showed up like more players in top eight, but hey, extremely hard tournament. I get it. And I think Wrath and Gavin had like fortunate brackets to get themselves in winner side. So yeah. And I mean, we can actually go for it.
Before we get off that topic, Battle of BC as well set a lot of the foundation.
Oh, true. Very similar to Level
BC,
Up.
Japan did bad.
Yeah,
right.
Zero
right.
sets won against non-Japan in top 32. Zero.
Well, they got bodied.
Yeah, they got destroyed. So then Level Up was like, oh my God, now they only have one Japanese representative in top eight. Like, they're still doing bad. But that guy won? I think it set up the conversation very, very well for Kagaribi to be invested in as a viewer from NA, as a viewer from Japan, and you know, even like the EU heavy hitters came to play it too.
Gluto
top eight, bro.
Gluto. I thought Raflo, Andres, Tarek, very great good going into the event. Like, there was a lot, man. It was a GOAT tournament.
Dude,
all I can say.
Andres and Crepe had a good. They both had great.
Crepe
runs,
almost beat.
Crepe almost beat Akola. Yeah.
Crepe.
That was
reverse 3-0. Almost reverse 3-0 with Wario, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The up smash call out at the end. I was like, damn, we're gonna bet it all on that. But you know, it is what it is. It was a really, really good set. And I don't think that up smash was necessarily bad. I will say it kind of like, it's definitely not as bad as the, who did the forward smash? The corn Nao's forward smash on Akola. No. Akola be getting away with this, bro.
Smash Con.
Wait a minute. Hold up. Why do players just throw out the wildest smash attack game five last stock last hit against Akola specifically? Because it was Nao at Smash Con. Then I saw it Crip Soleil at Kagaribi, man, where it's like the player with the stage control there was Crip, and then he just went for like a really hard read.
He rolling.
Yeah, man. And you know what's crazy? Both of them were to cover Akola's rolls. All right. If you're game five, last stock last hit versus Akola, he will not roll. He will not do it.
True.
I'll go for the roll read.
hey, one of your biggest wins is off of a crazy like read right on Spargo, like the forward tilt, drop shield forward tilt.
I have to. You know, there's a difference.
Your character has to take bad risks. Yeah, it's so crazy. Like Wario, I can understand. Wario kind of has to take risk eventually. But like Corrin, I was like, Nao, please just do reverse falling up air or back air until you win the game, please. But yeah,
dude,
Krebs, that set took like there were so many sets like that.
That's the real top player privilege.
There were so many mind control people.
Yep. Throw out a really risky move. You got the read, bro.
You do want to win, don't you?
Want to also end it? Yeah,
we gotta give it up, man. Roru, like, look, I get it. Luigi has some stuff. And the more I see, the more I start having to ask some questions about their character. I messaged Void the other day. I said, why does Luigi have six electrics? Like, what's going on? Like, what's going on, man? Like, he's just... Everything is confirming into up. You do rising forward air. What did you tell you? Down tilt, rising forward air.
He can do down tilt to start a zero to death combo.
Yep, at zero. Down tilt, rising forward air, nair.
Yeah.
What? And then it just random persists. Down tilt, grab. Down tilt, up tilt. It just grab kills you. Yeah, like a landing nair kills you. Like, random so many. You're just dying from random stuff. Like, it's just. Yeah. But. That character is so slow. Yeah. That character is so slow. So the fact that Rara is getting to these players and like capitalizing, and some of the stuff is really creative. Like obviously there's a clip going around on Twitter of Akola doing back air with the block on the ground, like rising back air over and over. But like if you look at how Rara played out that situation to get that like air dodge in up tilt, like that is a strange option. Like, it's unique. Like, people aren't going to do things
crazy?
Like that.
Okay, I saw that because I haven't been on Twitter much for the last 2 days, and I know that NA Twitter is exploding. So that clip, like, popped up, and I'm like, oh, is this the clip everybody's been, like, you know, just complaining about? And I watched the clip, and of course, you know, there's the block on the ground, and Akko is just spamming back air. And I'm like, okay, like, that looks kind of, like, degenerate, but we're just accepting, okay, once the block's gone, Raru can take space. And then Raru, you know, Akola did it again, reset the situation. I'm like, okay, cool. And then Raru gets in and kills Akola. And I'm like, is this not a good clip? Is this not, like, we're not giving Raru his flowers here? We're complaining about Akola back airing in a pretty strong autopilot, getting hard punished? I don't know. I thought it was a great clip.
Yeah, I mean... I think people are I know Chuck's like I get what people, because I think the foundation of it was like, well, Steve can do the rising back air, but all these other characters can do back air too, like Fox and Cloud. And it's like, no, they have to do falling back air. Steve is rising. Mm-hmm. And there's a block on the ground, like there is a difference. But also, like, I don't understand the notion of like players choosing strong options over and over being like bad gameplay. Like, I don't get it. Like, you watch Robs do Nair 20 times in a row. I've seen Mia do at least 15 forward airs in a row, neutral air forward air. Like, the options are strong. You're just going to do the strong options. And like, because characters have strong options, that makes like the gameplay from the player less skilled. That doesn't make any sense at all. Like, it probably makes it more skilled because the player's aware enough to use the option more. Like I don't understand how we say, like, oh, I'm going to choose, like, a worse option. That makes me a better player. No, it doesn't. That's stupid. That's stupid. You're just stupid. You just want to be unique. That doesn't make you good. You're just unique.
Just making sure I don't fit in.
I don't know, man. Like I don't know. But anyway, that's another topic for another day.
I will give my opinion on this one specific clip, but in the Patreon or content, I will go in depth. And this is like one of the situations that, okay, it's not a player picking a strong option that makes me upset. What makes me upset when I see a clip like that is what the block, the strongest smash move ever, what it's doing. That's what makes me angry. So like when I view that scenario, I think to myself, oh, this is a classic Smash Brothers situation. Earlier, we talked about Ryu spacing back air on Shield in Smash 4, and it made him feel like a regular, normal Smash character in Smash 4. This is a very normal situation where a character is throwing out back air, whether it's rising or falling, to cover different approaching areas. What makes this really dumb is when you do a rising back air, most of the time, a character can do a burst option to counteract that, especially if your burst option starts like, and when I say burst option, I usually mean something like a dash attack, something that is an attack that is combined with mobility to close the gap between you and opponent. And if your burst option starts high, something like a Little Mac dash attack, a Diddy Kong dash attack, Fox dash attack, anti-airs as well. It has a high hitbox. Anything that's quick and you can burst your character forward to break the zone that is being controlled, that is a normal Smash Brothers situation. Now, block makes this not normal because in competitive Smash, we usually ban stages with walls because there's certain interactions that can be abused if there's a wall between you and your opponent, aka it stops your movement. So if you cannot move into that zone, now you have to jump into that zone. Now you are completely cutting off and restricting movement. This is like, I just want people to know my TLDR for the Patreon content is Steve is crazy because block restricts movement and creativity. That's like my issue with the character. And it's mainly the move. The character is obviously there's a bunch of other crap to complain about. But like when I complain about Steve, I'm usually pinpointed on block. Because block is restricting movement, and I like movement. I think most people, when they play the game, and when I've heard people say what they like about Ultimate or Smash, is the movement that Smash provides for someone to be expressive and creative. That's what sets it apart from fighting games and all this other stuff. So the move block is like, when I see that clip, I'm not mad at someone picking like degenerate options. Like, you will do strong things. Bro, if you think that's bad, go load up a Como or Kiri set, playing Cloud or Sonic, it don't matter the character. You want to see, like, I do this because it's strong? Como Rikiri. That is the guy. Go look up his clips, and you can complain about that. But Akula doing block bear... Right. But, like, Akula doing block bear 5 or 6 times in a row is not someone just spamming... it is someone spamming a strong option, but I've seen worse than that. Like, way worse. That is so tame in terms... And, like... The counterplay is ballsy. Yes, you have to do a neutral air dodge and you have to like hard read when they're doing the rising bear. But if Akula just did it 5 or 6 times in a row, guess what the 7th time is going to be? Raru just blew him up for it.
Yeah.
Whatever. 6 or 7 times. Like Raru just blew him up and just timed it correctly and he did the perfect counterplay. Yeah. But that is when something is strong, there is generally a counterplay. And the fact that that clip showed the counterplay within the same clip, I'm in the same boat as Void where it's like... Yeah. Damn, Raru knew exactly what to do against this like
it was cool.
Overpowered strategy. But
well,
like,
and it's like right. What are your other options to run it like be an idiot and get hit? Like that's it. And a lot of people do that, dude. A lot of people can fucking do that.
It's crazy that you I actually want to know what characters can parry that backer and get a punish. There are gonna be some characters that can, but remember, most characters have to like parry into a dash attack or something like that, right? Probably and you're on the ground when you parry. So it's like can you do a parry jump aerial that can get to Steve drifting backwards after the bear? I don't know. I'm assuming
could probably do it.
What?
Fox.
What bear? Bear's pretty big. I mean, like I said, I don't know exactly what characters can do it, but I'm just saying, like, if the bear is like pretty far back, like it's to me in my brain or in my head, it feels like it would be hard to punish. Yeah, like you need something that's like. Has a like it's a fast aerial going forward and it needs to have a lot of range going forward. Fox Fair might be something that is because it's frame 5. Fox Fair is pretty big, so yeah, off that initial jump, right? But like again, Diamond Bear.
Any other character that can punish it is any character with a counter. which I it's really strange that people still don't do that in 2025. I guess you just forget about it.
I guess, yeah. There's so many parry OSs that people don't use. But yes, there are parry option selects that are very strong that were discovered within the first 6 months of the game that people don't use. But yes.
I actually forgot about parry counter until you said, I wonder who could do it. And I was like, who can do it?
I mean, I didn't even remember. It was a good call out. Yeah, that's a great point.
So it's getting late here. I think we might need to do a part two of this episode. If y'all are down, Void, I don't know what your schedule's like, but maybe we can figure something out. I'd love to do a part two. We could talk offline and figure it out. don't need to.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome. Nope. I would love to do that because there's so much more to talk about with this bracket, with everything else. And I think the bottom line from today is that we're all super proud of Big Gav. I think he did a good job over there, all that good stuff. And
excited. Shout out to Wrath, too.
Yeah,
like I am a huge Sonic complainer. I bitch about that character. Steve has taken its slot or Sonic slot for some time now, but I don't like that character. But I do believe that no matter the character, like if you're NA, I'm gonna cheer for you. You know what I mean? So I was rooting for Sonic. So I was rooting for Wrath. Like, and I've seen, like we've all seen Wrath play since he was pretty much a kid. So it's really sick to watch him grow as a competitor. And I think Wrath had a great bracket, and I think Wrath could have potentially even like been in grand finals. Like,
yeah,
I really do think it. That. And I do think he's like, he has the caliber to like go that far. And I honestly was surprised that Raru was able to beat him. Like if I was betting there, and like, this is not me betting with my heart, I would have bet Wrath.
I would have bet Wrath. Yeah.
I was betting Wrath.
Yeah. I would bet Wrath. And I mean, he's probably like kicking himself because like he knows that matchup's. I actually don't know if he knows, but like I'm assuming that matchup's pretty good for Sonic.
It's I think they have it as Luigi's worst matchup. I'm pretty sure they've played before, and Wrath has beaten him before. I'm almost positive. Maybe, you know, good old what do they call it? Smasher Zap,
baby.
Raru.
They are
1-1 in sets. Yep, 1-1 in sets. Wrath beat them the first time we played. I thought so, but I wanted to check and be sure.
Damn, I didn't even know that. I bet Wrath. Like, that's crazy. If I knew that he also had a set win, I was like, yeah, for sure. But yeah, I just wanted to shout out Wrath. Like, all like
I also,
go for it.
Shout out Big Boss.
Yes,
pleasing Mexican player.
Yeah,
at Kagaribi.
He's been on the grind.
Got 17th in a tournament this stacked.
Beat with Zachary,
Spargo, Leo, and Meister present. Big Boss got 17th. Good shit. I think it's a great run. I think people
totally
don't talk too much about it either.
Yeah. Last thing for me, at least, did y'all see that graphic? Like, if I saw this, it would be a top eight. Like, if you told me this were a top eight of a major, I would believe you. And it's like light. It's like Light, Spargo, Zachary, Yarda, Neo, Jazzo, like all the people who got 33rd, but it's just not top eight. Like, dude, think about that. Light, Mars. Spargo, Mars. Light, Spargo, Zachary, Yarda, Neo, Jazzo. I can't remember this one other person. Like
Lima.
Maybe was it Lima?
Lima's 33rd.
Like, that could be a top eight, and it's 33rd.
What a time, bro. All those 33rds, and we found the source file for the Mars 33rd image like within the same week. That's insane.
That's so funny.
That was very funny. That I'm sure he loved that and thought that was also hilarious that is resurfaced.
Generational meme. 33rd.
I'm sorry, Ty. It's funny. Anyway, let's keep talking Kakaribi, guys. I think that was really fun. But it's getting late for some of us. So
yeah, we can wrap it up and do a part two.
Sure. I would love a part two.
I'll work with your guys' schedules. Make it easy.
We'll have our people contact your people.
Yeah. Nice. Sounds good.
All right.
We'll have Chuck talk with Charles.
Hey.
Marcus Mumbles. Ass Heckles.
Ooh, Boy Charles Voices.
Thanks for joining us, y'all. We miss Gavin on the podcast, too. We hear y'all. He'll be back soon. Can't wait to catch up with him and all that good shit. Until then, we'll catch you later. See you.
See you.